All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show. I'm doing this one by myself. DP's gonna be here later for something else. All right, so, starting out with BuzzFeed. If you've been single basically your whole life, share with me your reasons why and how it's affected you. Millennials and Gen Zers, and maybe Gen Alpha, have proven to be the generation that does not follow societal trends like getting married to take things a step further. According to research, 41% of single people aren't even looking to date, let alone get married. As a single gal, I understand why people aren't actively looking to date someone. Creating a fulfilling, happy life for yourself, filled with people who fill your cup, can be enough for both of us. Enough for some of us, rather. Sorry. On that note, I'm turning to the people of the BuzzFeed community who have chosen to be single most of their lives to tell me about it. Why did you choose this route in life? Do you regret it? Are you happy with your choice? How do you navigate it? Do you like to date to have fun but never commit to someone? Maybe you're a child of divorced parents, and after watching what your parents went through with their failed marriage, you decided you didn't want that for yourself and stayed single. Perhaps you have yet to find a person who makes you as happy as you make yourself, and you have zero regrets about being single. Or maybe you never took dating seriously but are now struggling to find a partner and you regret not putting more time and effort into dating. Whatever your singlehood journey has been like, I want to hear all about it. Oh, okay, so this is apparently something that we can do. Okay, I was shared this, but... Okay, so that's a bunch of crap. Alright, so we'll... skip that one. That was a bunch of crap. Let's see here. Okay. No. BioShock and BioShock Infinite director Ken Levine says that games getting bigger has led to creative stagnation. You stop taking risks and people just tune it out. And he's right. In the opinion of BioShock franchise creator Ken Levine, the video game studio's continued obsession with making their works bigger and bigger has resulted in an industry-wide dearth of creativity, particularly as expansive budgets have led to the prioritization of trend chasing over innovation. Levine, who in the decades since directing BioShock Infinite's Burial at Sea DLC, which was very good, has focused his creative attentions on developing his upcoming sci-fi FPS Judas, which I'm very looking forward to playing, offered his perspective on the challenges facing AAA game dev today, while giving a rare interview to GamesIndustry.biz editor-in-chief James Batchelor in December of 2024. Asked by Batchelor as to what restrictions or challenges did the time pressures of development put on storytelling and advancing how stories are told in games, the System Shock 2 dev lamented, I think one of the problems we have in the industry right now is that games have gotten bigger and bigger and the graphical capacity has gone up and up. Just creating a door now versus creating a door 10 years ago takes a lot more time, because you have normal maps and traders and higher polygons and physics and all this other stuff to contend with, he explained. Everything's getting more expensive, especially in the big AAA space, because they're spending the most money. And when you're spending all this money, naturally you have people concerned about the commercial viability of it. But the problem with AAA is if you don't innovate, especially in games, you start losing people because they've seen it before. And so we have a potentially an over-reliance, in some case, on franchises. It wasn't easy to step away from BioShock, he then admitted. I never thought I'd have an established franchise. I tried multiple times and I've only made a couple of games that didn't have a sequel. But certainly I never really had a successful franchise before BioShock. But I saw an opportunity to create a new IP and take on some risk. I'm very fortunate that Take-Two put their faith in me, and not everybody has the wherewithal to do that, especially in the last few years, which have been very challenging. Take-Two has had success, and I'm very grateful to everybody else who's done well, like obviously the Rockstar guys who bring in a lot of revenue and who allow this kind of experimentation, because ideally you want to be putting bets on people taking risks in any sort of endeavor, he further opined. You also want to have people not taking as much risk. You need to sort of diversify. But AAA has become very difficult to take risks, and mostly because it's so expensive. And so I'm incredibly fortunate to be able to have the faith from the company to take risks and spend the time I need to make this successful. Drawing his thoughts on the topic to a close, Levine acknowledged how it is hard to do new things before ultimately reasoning. Quite often, if you take those risks, sometimes you're going to fall flat in your face. And the more expensive it gets, the trickier it gets. But I do think that without that, look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you stop taking risks and people just tune it out. Nothing is blessed by God to be successful, he concluded. You gotta give some people something that excites them, and that gets harder every year. But you know what? That's the job. Far from just random ranting, Levine's observations are supported by the many, many multi-million dollar budget flops that have released in recent years. For instance, Warner Brothers, we know about that. and Concord, we know about that. And Veilguard and Outlaws, we know about all that. And the Assassin's Creed and... Additionally, in light of all the praise given to From Software's Demon's Dark Souls franchise, as well as Elden Ring, and more and more developers have attempted to put their own spin on Souls, like Lies of P.E., Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and Black Myth Wukong. Admittedly, these games aren't particularly bad, and other than receive bad reviews, they offer very little substance of their own. That is true, they pretty much are doing the same thing. Should these trends continue, they will result in fewer people engaging with new titles, and doing so delivering a decisive financial blow to the already shaky industry. Alright, so he's just going to talk a little bit about Judas now. The first game from his fledgling Ghost Story Games studio, it's a rebrand of his former Irrational Games endeavor. Oh, okay, I see. It's called Ghost Story Games now. Judas, as the director assured Bachelor, will see him and his team push their storytelling and gameplay ambitions to new bounds by presenting a game heavily based upon recognition of player action in response to player action. Even just characters observing a long range of player action and commenting on it. He explained, "Hey, you saw this and you did that, and then you did this, and that was interesting because that caused that. We're doing that kind of stuff right now." And it's really just observing the players and then writing the types of lines that could react to various types of things. It's a huge amount of work because you have to think of all the things a player can do and then write in character responses for different characters to those actions in a way that feels organic. Well, that's kind of interesting. This will all come out in 2025. So there's Tom, Nefertiti, and Hope. Wave to the passengers of the Mayflower. This could be interesting. But yeah, they're spending way too much money on these games right now. And they can't afford to take risks. And we're seeing a big stagnation in gaming right now to the point where people are playing older games. And they're really, like, they're all for the remasters and remakes of classic games because the new games aren't delivering anymore. I wonder why. Maybe because shareholders have more of a say than gamers do, huh? That might be a reason. Okay, so we've got a lot, guys. Dog lover is eaten by pet pugs after dying in her apartment and lying undiscovered for days. A dog owner who died in her apartment was found eaten by her pet pugs after lying undiscovered for 2 days. Oh, for days, not 2 days. For several days. Adriana Niego, 34, had not been heard for 5 days before police made the harrowing discovery at her home near Bucharest, Romania. Officers arrived at the flat in Târgu Jiu with a relative to find Adriana, who went by Anastasia, lifeless with two pugs beside her. They said that it was clear that the unfed dogs had already begun to eat at her corpse. Ambulance crews confirmed Adriana's death, noting that there were no apparent signs of violence. Her body was transported to the Gorge Forensic Medicine Service for an autopsy to determine her cause of death. Another angel has gone to heaven, her sister Maria Alexandra said in a heartbreaking post on social media confirming the death. My sister is no longer among us. Police have opened an investigation and are exploring all avenues to figure out what happened. Due to the position she was found in, there were signs of cadaveric lividity, also known as liver mortis. This term describes the pooling of blood in the lowest parts of the body after death, and it causes a discoloration of the skin ranging from pink to dark purple. Officers went to flat after, excuse me, went to the flat after receiving a call from a relative expressing concern that she was not answering her phone and had not answered the door in a week. They said the relative went with them to the flat where they made the horrifying discovery. According to the police, firefighters helped to force the locked door of the woman's home open. After finding Adriana, the police issued a shelter order for the two dogs and they were taken by workers from the Gorge County Council. People on social media were quick to offer their condolences to Anja's family and express their shock. Condolences, I can't believe it. I'm so sorry. Well, these are just people online. Okay, I don't believe what just happened. I'm devastated. May God protect her. I mean, it's a sad, sad story. We don't know exactly what was going on. And of course, what's Trump doing? Imposing tariffs on China, Mexico, and Canada, which could disrupt nearly $1.7 trillion in annual trade. We'll see for ourselves. Don't see anything else. Oh yeah, this story here. Okay, so the Florida man turns in his own father after making revolting discovery on his phone. Basically, he found out that his father had a bunch of CSAM. Yeah, like very young CSAM. So, what I would have done is said, hey, let's go ocean fishing. And I would have just thrown him off the boat. Look, there's plenty of ocean out there, guys. Everybody's like wood chipper. It's like, that's messy. We've got all this ocean, and there's sharks, and God knows what else, right? So we just, over the, you know, push him over. Yeah! And there you go. It's done, just like that. Angry Canadian hockey fan boos U.S. national anthem at NHL game after Donald Trump slapped tariffs on them. I don't know what all these tariffs are going to do, but if things get really high, then I probably won't have as good of an opinion as him. Like, I'm sorry, man, but prices are already high, and they make things even more expensive because they're, you know, using the tariffs. Yeah, that's not going to be good. People aren't going to be able to afford anything, and then you're going to have real problems in this country. So look, I'm looking at it from both sides. I like some of Trump's policies, and I hope things work out, but if they don't, it's going to be bad. Doctors told these women that they were dying. The first thing they did was leave their husbands inside the alarming trend of cancer divorces. Wow. Cassandra Kalpaxis has witnessed heartbreak and betrayal from every angle during her 14 years as a lawyer handling divorce cases. But one peculiar type of marriage breakdown continues to shock her, even though she's seen it happen many times before and likely many times to come. The family law expert, 37, admits she never ceases to be amazed by the wives who walk into her office asking for divorce after finding out they're dying. They come to me in the middle of their cancer treatment and tell me they want a divorce, she tells me. They're either sick of living a lie and realize life is short, or they work out that they don't want to die next to a partner they're no longer in love with. Ms. Kalpaxis says people with a terminal illness often have a moment of clarity upon their diagnosis that makes them radically reconsider their marriage. And she finds they are very determined to see the legal process through to the end. Sometimes they don't know if they're terminal or not, but having cancer with a poor prognosis is enough to make them give their partner the flick, she adds. Wow. Ms. Kalpaxis finds that women who ask for a divorce tend to do so in their 50s, while men who walk out on their marriages do so in their 70s. But in cases where a terminally ill spouse initiates proceeding, it can happen at any age. The length of the marriage doesn't factor into the decision either. Neither does having children together. It's almost like they wake up after the diagnosis and decide they don't want to live a lie and they're sick of the charade, she says. In some cases, they feel completely disconnected from their spouse. Maybe they didn't support them through the diagnosis how they would have wanted. Or maybe they weren't picking up the slack at home. In sensitive cases such as these, Ms. Kalpaxis always asks the client if they are sure they want to go through their illness alone. They are invariably determined to. It is very comforting when these people come through the door after a diagnosis like that, keen to make such a significant decision, she reveals. Ms. Kalpaxis will never forget the first time it happened. The woman walked in, having just broken the news to her husband, and revealed she had a terminal diagnosis and didn't want to be stuck in her marriage until the end. From memory, they had been together for over 20 years, and she had finally had enough of being put last. Her jaw dropped to the floor, and she felt devastated for the woman whom she felt was better off facing cancer and death alone than with her husband. Ms. Kalpaxis personally hasn't had any men come through the door with terminal illnesses seeking divorce. She is sure some do seek divorce in similar situations, but it happens far often. Most of these women have hung on to these relationships for too long, putting everyone else first. Then they go through a life-changing diagnosis and they realize that they still aren't being put first, she explains. They are still expected to run the household and carry the same load despite being told that they're going to die soon. More often than not, these women come to me shortly after they're diagnosed. They explain nothing shifted and they aren't being supported. She has seen women begging for help and support, telling their husbands what they need from them, even as divorce proceedings begin. I've heard them say, I really need you to help around the house, take on more of the kids' activities. I need you to comfort me and make sure I'm okay. And quite often, the person on the other side argues that they're already doing a lot. They can't put their partner before their ego. Ms. Kalpaxis has seen women die in the middle of divorce proceedings. Sometimes we need to speed things up, even if it means not getting them everything they want in a settlement, she says. Because if they die before it's finished, then they are still classed as married at the end. And even if their family try to fight for them and their wishes, it doesn't hold much weight in court. Ms. Kalpaxis admits it is hard to see relationships break down because of cancer or other life-ending illnesses, because most newlyweds are optimistic when they vow to love each other in sickness and in health. Then they realize their other half isn't going to support them through cancer properly, so they choose divorce, she adds. Sometimes women find it easier to go back to their family and get support from their parents or siblings during their final months. So, yeah. So, there you go. I mean, there's a woman that's going to share her story, but that's the gist of it. Dating apps are so 2024. Let's start meeting in person again. If you've ever used dating apps, you likely understand the struggle of online dating in today's non-committal world. That's why so many people are opting to get off the apps in 2025. While it served its purpose back during the pandemic, when we literally couldn't leave the house, dating apps appear to be leading us down a darker path. Our end goal of finding love and connection is seemingly being sabotaged by the very application that promises just that. Damn. Jonathan Haidt, a social psychologist and professor at New York's University Stern School of Business, spoke with the Wall Street Journal about the implications of dating apps on younger generations. During his interview, he noted that the apps create a sort of division and misunderstandings between men and women. Let's leave those annoying dating apps in 2024. I think the dating apps are one of the reasons driving the sexes apart in heterosexual dating, making it more difficult to date, to court, to fall in love, to marry and have children, he said. I think we're going to look back on this and say the dating apps had all these unintended consequences that are really messing up the romantic lives of Gen Z. Exactly. I can assure you it's not just Gen Z experiencing these negative impacts. Time and time again, I stumble upon videos and posts from both men and women of various sexualities venting about their experiences on the apps and claiming they're finally quitting. With so many options at our fingertips, it's difficult to find success with just one person who's willing to commit. As a result, many people are opting out of dating apps altogether, finding more authentic ways to meet prospective romantic partners. This is apparently the go-to dating trend for 2025. So instead of spending a Friday night scrolling on Hinge, maybe head out to a local concert or event in your area and force yourself to mingle a bit. Wow, like the old days! If that seems too intimidating, ask your friends to introduce you to people they think you might connect with. Like the old days! Even without the intention of forming a romantic connection. Wow! Simply broadening your social circle can help open opportunities for you to meet other singles. Additionally, I found that by pursuing what you love, whether that's attending concerts, going hiking, or running with a local group, you'll meet like-minded people who you'll connect with more authentically. Yes! That's how you do it! That's how we did it. I'm a 70-year-old porn star. Now my youngest daughter is following in my footsteps and we even work together. A mother and daughter have revealed why they both joined the porn industry together. Seika Black, 70, and her youngest daughter, Nessie, 23, are both adult content creators and they even help each other out when it comes to their X-rated careers. In a joint YouTube video, the pair explain how they started in porn, with Seika admitting that it all started after she and her husband started swinging. I retired from accounting and now we're having fun, Seika exclaimed. Nessie said that during a family trip to Disneyland, she discovered raunchy messages on her mom's phone, which made her realize that her parents were swingers and that Seika was also a full-blown porn star. It was the last thing in my head I thought that you'd be doing, but once I put the puzzle pieces together, I thought it was very cool, Nessie admitted, because that's something I'd kind of always been interested in, but I didn't want to jump into the industry too young, she continued. Nessie said that she hadn't started exploring adult webcamming sites as soon as she turned 18. That she did start exploring adult webcamming sites as soon as she turned 18. But that she didn't take the plunge into creating racing content. She was around until 20. She waited to 20. Oh, we are going to definitely talk about this guy. Bonnie Blue's still with her husband? Well, that's a TikTok theory. We don't know. We'll also talk about this. Seika and Nessie now both create racing content on OnlyFans, while Seika has gone one step further by starring in multiple adult roles for major porn companies. Although they don't collaborate directly on their adult content, Seika admitted that her husband, who's Nessie's father, often serves as her cameraman when she's filming the OnlyFans. Daddy is my video photographer, editor, so we have fun together, Seika gushed. Nessie also admitted that her fiancé helps with her career, too, insisting that it's helped their relationship because they're not as stressed as they were when they both had regular 9-to-5 jobs. Me and my fiancé went to trade school and developed other skills before we jumped into this, just in case we didn't want to do it anymore, Nessie said. When Seika took the plunge into porn after retiring from her accounting career, Nessie quit her day job much earlier in life. So that's a while there. I wasn't happy with my job at the condo, so I was like, I'm just going to try OnlyFans, Nessie confessed, adding that her mom told her to go for it when she first considered it. Nessie said that her parents had no problem whatsoever with her joining OnlyFans. Well, of course not. I mean, you see how the family's all involved. Seika added, at that time, we were even trying to help you with advice, but this younger generation are better at the tech than what we are. Due to the generational gap, Nessie and Seika have been able to help each other out in different parts of the industry. While Nessie assists Seika with social media, Seika helps her daughter out with the business side of the industry. Even though they don't film raunchy content together, Nessie awkwardly admitted that sometimes her mother's fans will message her on Instagram. Seika has now become a big name in the industry and was even recently nominated for the AVN Awards. Although she didn't win this year, the Seika Takes a Ride star soaked up the spotlight by walking the red carpet in a glitzy ruby-colored gown. When it comes to retirement, the 70-year-old said that she's currently looking at doing another 5 years in the industry. I let each day come and go, and I just wing it, Seika said. Just when you think you've seen it all. Most parents want the best for their children. My goodness, things have changed. I saw Seika in person, and her body in an odd shape, as I remember. You could take a picture with her for $5, and a guy gave her a $20, and Seika said, I'm not a bank, I don't give change. The guy complained and was thrown out. Damn. Oh, look at this. So, it says here, moms whose children were raped and murdered by illegal migrants slam Selena Gomez for weeping over deportations. Oh, well. I mean, I agree with those moms. Dude, we let all these freaking horrible people in and they raped and murdered their kids. They're like, oh, it's so sad. You can join them if you want, Selena. Okay, so... porn star Emily Willis, 25, left permanently disabled following rehab stint for ketamine addiction. This is a big fucking deal, guys. Okay, one of the biggest names in adult entertainment had been left permanently disabled after seeking treatment for drug addiction at a Malibu rehab center, according to a lawsuit. The family of Emily Willis, 25, has now taken legal action against Summit Malibu and its parent company, Malibu Lighthouse Treatment Centers, reports The Mirror. The lawsuit cites an abuse of a dependent adult, professional negligence, negligence, and fraudulent business practices. Damn. Willis, who starred in over 700 films throughout her career, she's only 25, remains in a semi-conscious state after suffering cardiac arrest at the facility in early 2024. She checked into the rehab center on January 7, 2024, seeking treatment for a ketamine addiction. Willis had been consuming 5 to 6 grams daily of the drug for an entire year, which led to serious side effects including urinary incontinence and night terrors. According to court documents cited by the Daily Star, she'd already been diagnosed with major depressive disorder, anxiety disorder, and PTSD, and was on antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds. Drug tests conducted upon her admission to the facility revealed that she didn't have ketamine or other substances in her system, and she continued to test clean over the following days despite her rapidly failing health. The lawsuit claims that Willis soon became disheveled, frail, and disoriented and was struggling to walk while in the facility. She was also barely eating, not showering, or getting dressed and suffered from aches, tremors, spasms, weakness, appeared to be in pain, and experienced vaginal pain. James A. Morris from Morris Law Firm, who was representing Emily and her guardian, said eventually she grew so dehydrated that a nurse could not measure her blood pressure. Wow. By this time, her acute medical distress had been recorded, and yet they left the decision to go to an urgent care up to a patient who was suffering incredible pain and could not care for her own well-being. There is no excuse for their failure to obtain medical and psychological care. According to the lawsuit, Willis was discovered unconscious by a nurse practitioner on February 4th of 2024. Paramedics performed CPR on her for about 30 to 40 minutes until they restored heartbeat, but at that point, the lack of oxygen to her brain had left her comatose. She has reportedly regained consciousness since then and can now track things with her eyes, but is unable to move or speak, is in a care home in Utah. Morris stated that if the staff followed standard medical protocols, Emily would have had the opportunity to regain control of her life. No patient should ever be subjected to a horrendous breakdown in clinical care. Her health was ignored until it was too late, and now her life is forever changed. Wow. They say that she can pretty much only... let's see if it goes a little further, because I think it talked about her situation. No, it didn't. Okay, so basically, she can see, she can hear, and she can blink. But that's about it. That's all she can do. Now, an off-color comment would be to say, well, if you wanted a living sex doll, you know, there you go. Okay, so, millionaire male OnlyFans model, 21, admits he is desperately lonely with no social skills and a porn addiction. One of the most successful male models on OnlyFans has lifted the lid on his secret life of loneliness in a heartbreaking new interview. CJ Clark, 21, is already a multimillionaire with a huge house in San Diego and several luxury cars. But he tells GQ that his daily reality is far different than the happy-go-lucky hunk his fans see on social media. Living alone in a big house is super lonely, he told the publication. The bigger the house, the lonelier you get. CJ spends most of his day going to the gym, watching movies alone, or chatting to his subscribers. It went from feeling like I never had any attention in my life to like, holy shit, 10,000 people were seeing me be myself, he said. He's only ever had one serious girlfriend, which was a long-distance relationship, and he's got trouble talking to strangers face-to-face. Instead of meeting people in the real world, he prefers to subscribe to other OnlyFans creators and message them through the app, even though he knows he's probably not really talking to the creator themselves. I know in the back of my head that I'm talking to some middle-aged man, he admits, referring to the agencies that are hired to run popular OnlyFans accounts. And bots. Lots of bots. Okay, so CJ said that he had trouble in school and was diagnosed as both dyslexic and super ADHD in third grade. He also described himself as a gargantuan porn addict by age 12 and said he was bullied at school with very few friends. More recently, a doctor told him he might have Asperger's. CJ says he first found validation through social media when he gained a huge following on TikTok. When he was just 17, many of his followers asked him if he'd join OnlyFans once he became legal. A few months after his 18th birthday, CJ joined the Racy subscription site and earned $5,000 in his first 24 hours. Now he's a multimillionaire with a McLaren and a Porsche, but his large San Diego home remains largely unfurnished, with CJ spending most of his time creating content with a life-size sex doll or watching TV on his couch. That's what he's doing. He suffered a psychotic break last year, triggered by Richard Linklater's existential animated film, Waking Life. Wow, and I've actually watched that film. Alex Jones is in that film, guys, and is now in therapy. Recent studies suggest that Generation Z, that's a really good fucking film, by the way, guys. I highly recommend you go download Waking Life or watch it streaming or whatever. It's worth watching. And, of course, the Alex Jones part is before he got, like, really fucking popular and before he got super political. So you're going to see a completely different classic side of Alex Jones, and I highly recommend you watch it. Recent studies suggest that Gen Z, born between 97 and 2012, are less sexually active than previous generations. And this guy, look at him. He's having problems with girls. Guys, see this? This guy's having problems with girls.
The social issues.
I know.
Part of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know, you can't.
But these girls, but you would think, but he's got the muscles and the money. Why aren't the girls running to him? Because that doesn't happen anymore. That's what I'm saying.
Why aren't whores that look good getting as much attention?
Many reasons for the trend have been cited, from mental health issues and stress to COVID lockdowns and addictions to smartphones. Many Zoomers are turning to technology to get their rocks off with each other by sexting or having virtual sex rather than in-person physical sex. Additionally, almost two-thirds of young people are addicted to online porn, according to a leading mental health and addiction clinic. Paracelsus Recovery said research on patients referred for treatment suggested that porn addiction is significantly more prevalent than official numbers suggest. Children are being exposed to online porn from as young as 9, and I do believe in regulation, according to a recent study for the Children's Commissioner for England. Quarter of 16 to 21-year-olds first saw porn on the internet while still in primary school. By the age of 13, 50% have been exposed to it. But Paracelsus Recovery, which is based in Zurich in London, warned it had seen a 150% increase in the number of people being treated for porn addiction between 2019 and 2023. One 27-year-old British man treated by Paracelsus Recovery said he became addicted to pornography and started watching it from the age of 12. He said, I lost control over my behavior. I was sitting in my room smoking weed and watching porn videos from morning to night. Good Lord.
Man.
I couldn't even do that.
Once I've used them what they're used for,
that's about it.
Other stuff.
I had no friends and it messed up my education and I felt homeless. I cannot even articulate how disgusting and ashamed I felt. Yeah, I mean, I feel pretty bad too if I was watching porn from morning to night. Well, good Lord, there's other things I want to do. Like, and
well,
some people
in your
will be.
Head, when that's all you see, you're like, everyone's out there doing that except for me.
I guess.
But it's fake.
I applaud him.
He doesn't have a social life. What he thinks actual social people do is different.
I applaud him for being so honest, although surely any girl he asked for a date would go out with him. I don't know about that. Asperger's is a common undiagnosed issue. It's also called high functioning. I know I have it. These people can fit into society and everyday life, but have communication issues and often ADHD and anxiety. I know, I have it. While most people know naturally how to socialize, how to interact, what to talk about, how to filter what they say, they don't have that ability. No, I don't. Shy kids and nerds are often undiagnosed Asperger's. Successful people can have it. Steve Jobs and Jim Harbaugh likely have had it.
Well, you know, Elon Musk has said on Saturday Night Live he's got it.
As well as other professional athletes. Add the internet, social media, streaming, chat forms. We have new generations of all people without Asperger's who are lonely and awkward because they're not forced to go out and interact in person with others. Before tech hit, people in college dorms would leave their dorms open so they could meet and socialize. Now all dorm doors are closed, and the Surgeon General says loneliness is an epidemic. It's common, but this tool doesn't have it, I assure you. Most people do not naturally know how to socialize and interact with others. These are learned behaviors. I always cringe when people claim something is common but not diagnosed. If something has not been diagnosed, one cannot state it is common. Also, I do not think most gals would want to go out with this tool, especially since they're not who he wants to date. Not true. My son was in a dorm a few years ago, and all doors open and lots of new connections and camaraderie. At least he has his labels, and that's all that matters to this generation. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Does he have... I don't know. Is he... Maybe he's talking to robots. I mean, yeah, he's definitely talking to robots. I know people that are doing OnlyFans with robots. You just literally build an AI chatbot and people talk to it. They don't even know. For the most part. Okay, we already talked about the cancer divorces. Almost done. Okay, so... Rapper, we gotta talk about this. Oh, what the hell? Canada and Mexico are striking back with retaliatory tariffs on American goods.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was hilarious.
Oh, shit.
She is huge.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Plus-size rapper who calls herself a BBW sues Lyft after driver said she couldn't fit in his car.
Plus is an understatement. There you go.
A plus-size rapper who describes herself as a B... She's not a BB, she's a UBBW, ultra-big, beautiful woman. She's or S... B- you know, she's an S... what is it? SBBW, super
she's
big.
She's a BMW.
Yeah.
That can't drive on the Autobahn.
A.K.A. Big Beautiful Woman is suing Lyft after one of the company's drivers allegedly told her she was too large to fit in his car. Dank Demos... who has previously disclosed that she weighs nearly 489 pounds.
Fuck.
Claims that she's almost half a ton.
That's almost two of me.
Claims the rejection unfolded earlier this month in Detroit when the Lyft driver rolled up in his Mercedes-Benz sedan and immediately locked his doors. I can fit in this car. The rapper, who also goes by Dadua Blanding, could have been heard saying in a video she posted on social media on Jan 19th.
He had the
Believe me.
Tires on his car. He's like, fuck that, you're gonna bust my shit.
Believe me, you can't. The driver shot back, adding later there was no room in the back and that his tires wouldn't be able to handle the weight.
I do not doubt that.
The driver who identified himself as Ibrahim. Oh, wow. And the now viral clip was filmed apologizing to Demos, but maintaining that he was canceling the ride and telling her that she should order an XL vehicle. XL video.
Yeah. It probably makes sense. He probably showed up in a little car. He's going to have... It's going to look like you opened a can of biscuit down. Everything...
I've been in this situation before, the driver, before Demos responded. So every big person you turn down because they can't fit in your car, don't go to China. You're fat! Well, you're really fat!
Yeah. They'll call you out. Plus, they're racist.
Oh,
they're
A lot of times. You're fat gorilla! He's a gorilla, gorilla! Demos, who describes herself on Instagram as a paid fat queen, and, well, you know, some of those words, like the P and the H needs to just be replaced by an F, and declared in one post last year that she weighed 554 pounds.
You think of what kind of animals are 500, bears? There's bears that are 500 pounds.
Could she fight a...
maybe a grizzly. I don't know. I can't remember. I think some of them get into the thousands.
Yeah, they do. Slap Lyft with the lawsuit this week. She later updated fans that she weighs 489.
Tigers get to from 400
That's
to
not much
pounds.
Lighter. I've been in cars smaller than that, she told Fox 2 after the suit was filed.
On a dare? Or what?
I
was
just
it a
want,
bet?
I just
I bet
want,
you can't break this car.
I just want them to know that it hurt my feelings. Meanwhile, her video of the exchange had racked up more than 340,000 views on TikTok.
Good night. It looked like she's... don't know, carrying full-size beavers in her fucking britches.
A Lyft spokesperson told the Post the company couldn't comment on specific incidents caught up in litigation, but they condemn discrimination.
They got damn dog fights going on in their britches. Look at that.
Yeah.
Let me out.
All right.
Oh, man.
Okay, so this is interesting. I know everybody likes the carnivore diet, but I think this man went a little bit crazy. TGH patient's hands filled with cholesterol after he ate 6 to 9 pounds of cheese and butter for 4 months. Too much of a good thing is a bad thing, and a patient at Tampa General Hospital found out the hard way when he overloaded on cheese and fats for his carnivore diet. An article published in JAMA Cardiology said a man in his 40s had been suffering from yellowish nodules on his palms, soles, and elbows after going on carnivore for about 8 months. The article was written by Dr. Constantinos, whatever that is, an interventional cardiologist for Tampa Heart and Tampa General Hospital, and 2 other doctors.
So what happened?
The patient adopted a carnivore diet approximately 8 months before presentation, an abstract from the article said. His dietary habits included a high intake of fats, consisting of 6 to 9 pounds of cheese, sticks of butter, and additional fat incorporated into his daily hamburgers.
I think the cheese might have been it was too much.
Initially, the man said he experienced weight loss, increased energy, and mental clarity, but he ended up having to go to Tampa after his limbs began showing painless nodules. The JAMA article found that the patient's cholesterol level exceeded 1,000 milligrams. Ooh. A massive increase from his baseline of 210 to 300.
Good or bad cholesterol?
For reference, the Cleveland Clinic states that a healthy individual should have a total level under 200. The patient was eventually diagnosed with a condition known as xanthelasma, the buildup of cholesterol under the skin, forming yellow growths that usually appear in corners of the eyelids. 50% of people who develop that condition have high cholesterol levels, typically occurring in people between 35 and 55 years of age. Condition associated with high risk of heart disease and atherosclerosis. I don't know what that is. Cholesterol levels can be lowered through exercise, medication, and eating more vegetables and fruits and fewer fatty foods.
Of course, they say there's no proof that statins actually do anything. It's actually counterproductive.
So, you know, like how your body is meant to consume nutrition. However, this does not go away on its own and must be treated through surgery or often therapeutic methods. Even then, they can reoccur if cholesterol levels are not down to a healthy level. So, there you go.
Of course, you need, there's LDL and I can't remember which one is the good one, but that one, they usually say you can have a lot of it. But you don't want the bad one.
Oh, yeah.
And the if you start eating anything vegetable, anything that's polysaturated is not good for you.
Okay, entire God is a Geek editorial staff walk out and cut ties with the alt-right founder. It has been increasingly clear we can no longer separate the site from the owner. Entire staff of God is a Geek has quit en masse after its founder Calvin Robinson mimicked a Nazi salute at an event last week, causing a widespread backlash that resulted in him losing his position in the Anglican Church and impacting the work of the site still associated with his name. Robinson, who is reportedly no longer part of the site's editorial team but is still listed as its owner, claims he's not a Nazi but made the gesture at the National Pro-Life Summit last week as a mockery of the hysterical liberals. In a statement this evening, the team said in light of the recent actions of GIAG's owner, the editorial team has taken the decision to cease publication on GodIsAGeek.com. We've each put years of work into the site attempting to keep entertaining despite the actions of our estranged owner. His input on the site has been zero for several years, but we cannot comment. We can't continue to say nothing. To be absolutely clear, we do not support, share, or condone Calvin Robinson's politics or actions. It says, as a result, the entire editorial team will be stepping down with immediate effect. We will create a news site, and our future content will be published there, bereft of any connection to Calvin Robinson. It will be hard to start again, hard to walk away from the work we've done here off our own backs, but it's the right thing to do. We'll no longer publish work under any of our names on this site. Whatever the future holds, we will be working together to bring content that's fair, inclusive, and entertaining as we always have, but we'll be doing it on a new banner, and we hope that some of you will come with us on the new journey. Post finished by saying the editorial term, cannot apologize, or whatever, we get it. Okay. So they left that. So, Quentin Tarantino is in no hurry to direct the final movie. He pledges to wait till his son can have lifelong memories on the set. Yeah.
Wonder what movie.
Let's see here. But he did say some... He's writing a play, and it's probably going to be the next thing I end up doing. If it's a fiasco, I probably won't turn it into... I won't turn it into a movie, but if it's a smash hit, it might be my last movie.
Wonder what... I figure he loved doing movies.
Mm-hmm. Well...
Because, you know, he got into it because he used to watch all the Grindhouse, and he used to work at a movie rental.
Well... This is what he's saying. It's a big fucking deal pulling a play off, and I don't know if I can. So here we go. That's a challenge, a genuine challenge. But making movies? Well, what the fuck is a movie now? What, something that plays in theaters for a token release for 4 fucking weeks? All right, and by the second week, you can watch it on television. I didn't get into all this for diminishing returns. I mean, it was bad enough in 97. It was bad enough in 2019, and that was the last fucking year of movies. That was a shit deal as far as I was concerned. The fact that it's gotten drastically worse and that it's just a show pony exercise. Now the theatrical release, you know, and then like, yeah, in 2 weeks you can watch it on this streamer and that one. Okay, theater? You can't do that. It's the final frontier. So he's doing a play because, you know, you can't just stream the play right to, you know, that's why he wants to do it like that. Prince William's porn content obsession has strained the marriage with Kate Middleton. They were bloody great gazongas. Just the biggest gazongas you ever saw. That's nice, dear. Oh no, Kate. They were like mountains. Bloody mountains. She had such big mountains.
Rolling hills of Dublin.
Yes.
Or the Scottish Isle.
I'm sure she was quite nice, dear.
No, you don't understand, dear.
Nice? I whipped my tallywhacker for about a straight hour. That's enough.
Like to
Is
give
this
some...
the man I married?
I'd like to sling out some of my spotted dick for her.
Certainly going to give her a little bit of the... What was it? Taters and... What was it? Mash? Bangers and mash. Certainly going to give her a little bit of the bangers and mash.
Yeah.
Already! That's enough! Enough!
Give her some of the beans on toast.
Recent rumors have surfaced that Prince William's long-standing interest in adult entertainment is causing distress for the royal family, particularly affecting his wife, Kate Middleton.
Let's go meet some of them. Go to West Hollywood.
Reports suggest that during his time at St. Andrews University... The prince was known for his excessive rental of risque films, often incurring late fees. A source close to the royal family shared that William's choices in entertainment have been a source of embarrassment, especially as Kate tries to recover from severe medical treatments. With the royal family already dealing with various challenges, including health issues and public scandals, this revelation adds another layer of complexity to their lives. According to the palace insiders, Kate Middleton is deeply embarrassed by her husband's viewing habits, which include a penchant for softcore films. Oh, he likes the softcore. Concerns are growing as these habits continue, seemingly unchecked, leaving the Duchess feeling isolated and concerned about further public disgrace. Oh. Now, you can't be watching such smut.
Softcore's the gateway porn.
Now, Kate, this is artistic merit here. Look at this.
Oh, yeah.
You see the bouncing breasts. I see the acting and the... What acting? When she moans?
Do you not see the man in the boat? The ocean is is rough tonight. Look at that. And there, it's next to a forest. We need to burn the forest and kill the man in the book.
Dr. Gilda Carl, a mental health expert who has not treated the prince, suggests that William might be using these escapes to cope with the harsh realities facing his family. She advises that if these habits interfere with the responsibilities as a father and future monarch, therapeutic intervention might be necessary. This situation puts additional strain on a family already navigating a multitude of personal and public challenges. From King Charles' battle with cancer to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's scrutiny over their financial endeavors after leaving royal duties.
I'll tell you, she's a smoke show. I don't think I'd need porn.
But she might be very boring in bed.
She's doing her wifely duties. Oh.
If she even... And also, she's dealing with medical things
well, yeah,
right
at
now.
The moment.
So
well,
she
can rub one out. Give the man a break.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. So, we talked about that. But we talked about that. Hold on. So, of all the bad things that can happen to you, be glad you're not this guy. Drunk man's penis freezes to icy pavement during bar fight arrest, but he can see the funny side. A drunk man's penis froze to the ground outside a bar in Canada while he was being restrained for fighting during a night out, but he hasn't lost a sense of humor. Blake McPhee reportedly got drunk and started arguing with other bargoers at the East Village Pub and Eatery in Fort McMurray, Alberta, on January the 12th. As the dispute spilled out onto the street into sub-zero temperatures, things got physical and security guards attempted to restrain him. As he struggled against security, his pants fell down, causing him to become fully exposed to the elements. That's when his manhood got stuck to the icy pavement. McPhee was seen on video fighting with numerous security guards while they waited for the police to arrive. An eyewitness told TMZ that the rowdy bar-goer kicked a security guard in the groin just before he was pinned to the ground where he was held for 20 minutes. To remove him from the ice, they forced him up and left some skin behind in the process,
oh,
the outlet
fuck.
Reported.
Yeah, nothing fun about that. Get some warm water, somebody, and a spatula.
McPhee, seemingly not too bothered about the publicity, took to Facebook to address his newfound fame. Man, I don't know how I get myself in these fucked up situations, he wrote. Guess that's what I get for being a drunk lunatic at a bar. He did take issue with losing his pants in the struggle. Still don't understand why it was necessary to rip my fucking drawers clear off while I'm being arrested with three cops and two security dicks on me, but that's okay, he wrote.
Dicks on
that's
you.
What he said. Is I mean, it's...
Teabagged him, huh?
Still, McPhee kept a sense of humor about the ordeal. Gone are the days a feller can get his wiener frozen fucking solid to the ground without it going viral, he said. Anyway, glad I could be of some entertainment and back to making headlines. Gonna go crawl inside a hole and cry myself to sleep now. P.S. Sorry, Ma.
I don't know if it makes the paper. Not only does it make the paper that you froze your nuts to the damn ground, it's your fucking... Guy can't hold their booze.
Oh no, fresh blow for Barack Obama amid rumors of marriage dramas with wife Michelle. He's gonna get divorced.
Yeah.
Barack Obama is about to get divorced.
He's like, Michelle, I think I like women. No. No, Barack, you're sticking with me.
His mom, okay, so a bit of Elizabeth Arden cream on it, you're good to go. Frozen Todger remedy, courtesy of the Duke of Sussex. The boys had some fun. It wasn't a John Bobbitt story. That's a very popular European... Well, okay, this is from the U.S. All is good. Same thing next Saturday night. One more story for our rocking chairs. You know the kids will be shaking their heads, but hopefully the grandchildren won't be listening. I agree with this comment. What is this? Oh, man. Lyra Valkyria nearly suffers major wardrobe malfunction in the Women's Royal Rumble, but WWE fans spot Liv Morgan's quick thinking to help her. Gotta look at this real quick.
Well, yeah, we gotta see what happened.
Lyra Valkyria nearly had an embarrassing moment seconds into a Royal Rumble entrance in Indianapolis. The WWE Women's Intercontinental Champion entered the Women's Rumble at number 4, but didn't have much time to make an impact before she was battling her wardrobe, not superstars. The Irish star saw her stretch come undone around the neck. Oh, man. Valkyria, valiantly was trying to juggle, keeping herself covered and fighting on the match.
Well, I'm going to have to look that up on the Peacock.
Former world champion Liv Morgan, who entered the match at number 2, spotted the problem and drop-kicked her peer over to the opposite corner so Valkyria could correct the problem. The cameras stayed off Valkyria, but WWE employees could be seen running over to aid her and sorting out the attire.
Ref, time out.
Oh, shit.
Did she not see her trying to tie her top?
No, she did that on purpose so she would leave the ring. It just said that. It just said that she did that on purpose. Thankfully, Valkyria was able to sort out the wardrobe malfunction and battle on in the matchup. She's eventually second eliminated by Ivy Nile in a matchup where the returning Charlotte Flair had been out of action for over 700 days with a bad ACL injury.
Yep.
Managed to outlast the field and win her second Rumble. Flair will now have the chance to pick between Raw Women's Champion Rhea Ripley and SmackDown Women's Champion Tiffany Stratton.
Ripley.
And with the Queen widely expected to pick the latter.
She's okay. Australian. For beer.
Valkyria has been having a stellar spell on the main roster herself, becoming the first ever Women's Intercontinental Champion after making the finals of the Queen of the Ring in 2024. Following the footsteps of her compatriot and WWE legend Becky Lynch, Valkyria is expected to feature prominently in 2025. Okay, so we've got two more and we're finished. Okay, so this is important, guys. Should have talked about this first. Vaccine safety alert. Jab rolled out to millions could cause neurological illness, health chiefs warn. A new vaccine offered to millions of pensioners and pregnant women could trigger a serious neurological condition, officials have warned. The alert, issued by U.S. health chiefs, concerns a jab that protects against respiratory...
RSVs.
Okay.
Something kids can get and kill them.
Right, which was rolled out to vulnerable people in Britain for the first time last year. The FDA said results of an American study suggested two types of RSV jab carry a significant increased risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome, a disabling condition that causes damage to nerves 42 days after vaccination. While still recommending the jabs for eligible adults, FDA officials said GBS would now be listed as a risk in leaflets given to patients. In the UK, the condition is already noted as a potential complication in patient information. However, not all of those who receive the jab will be warned verbally of the risks. It's a bug that causes... Well, we know RSV is a bug that causes coughs and colds in most people, but can be potentially deadly for the elderly as well as young babies. So 100 children die from the virus each winter. It's also estimated to contribute to the deaths of 8,000 adults over the same period due to the increased strain on the infection puts on their hearts, causing the organ to fail. And of course, they've got Abrizo and Abrexi... okay. So, in the U.S. FDA study, officials combed through the vaccine reaction data on two RSV jabs, Abrexo and Arexvi. They found that Abrizvo, the type of RSV jab offered in the U.K., there were an additional 9 cases of the syndrome per every million doses. For Arexvi, there was an additional 7 cases of the syndrome per million doses. Oh. This is significantly more than the equivalent for the flu vaccine, which generates 1 to 2 cases of the syndrome per million doses. Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. GBS is a poorly understood condition. It occurs when the body's immune system, which normally protects people from infection, mistakenly attacks healthy nerve cells. Initial signs include a tingling and numbness in the hands and feet, which is followed by muscle weakness and difficulties moving and following weeks. In some cases, it can lead to problems breathing, facial paralysis, and impaired vision. It's normally temporary if treated. Most patients recover within a year. Some are left with permanent nerve damage. So there you go. That's all about RSV. You know. Okay. 75 been offered it. Refuses if they didn't know it would be annual, biannual, at once a lifetime jab. I'm not having another chemical put into my body. Rely on my own immune system, even though I've got COPD. Safe and effective. In other words, it's a safe bet that the sales will generate an effective profit. Avoid at all costs. Three of the biggest lies ever uttered, along with two jabs for full protection. Some have had half a dozen of these COVID ones, including my mom's friend who had a mixed bag of them. What could possibly go wrong? Remember when they said you couldn't mix and match them if you had the AZ one and you couldn't, if you had a bad reaction, you had to have the AZ booster? Yes, I do. That was at the outset. When they rolled out the boosters, they seemed to do away with that idea. Certainly not. I'm an ex-nurse and I get all mine done as soon as I could because I know what the greatest risk is, and that's the actual illness. That's all very well until you're unlucky who has the bad one or even the fatal reaction the jab is supposed to protect you from something milder. Maybe you're only one in a million, but it's still hard to cope with the fact that you lost the gamble. My family's a history of bad reactions to vaccines from long before COVID, which makes me wary of new jabs. But everyone should be allowed to decide for themselves without pressure or propaganda from others.
Well, COVID, it's not an actual vaccine. mRNA?
More on this in just one second. Because there's some interesting thing you need to know about. As our final article, which is an old article. So, we have... I don't know what they're doing here, but...
Coded malware and stranded...
Hold on, we're gonna... You're gonna do this. Gonna
that
do...
That didn't sound...
Gonna did it. Hold on. Just give me a second. Here we go. All right, here we go, guys. Biohackers encoded malware in a strand of DNA. This is 2017, but this is very interesting. When biologists synthesize DNA, they take pains not to create or spread a dangerous stretch of genetic code that could be used to create a toxin or worse, an infectious disease. But one group of biohackers has demonstrated how DNA can carry a less expected threat, one designed to infect humans and... one designed to infect not humans nor animals, but computers. A new research they plan to present at the USENIX, USENIX, security conference on Thursday, a group of researchers from the University of Washington has shown for the first time it's possible to encode malicious software into physical strands of DNA, so that when a gene sequencer analyzes it, the resulting data becomes a program that corrupts gene sequencing software and takes control of the underlying computer. Wow. While that attack is far from practical for any real spy or criminal, it's one that researchers argue could become more likely over time as DNA sequencing becomes more commonplace, powerful, and performed by third-party services on sensitive computer systems. And perhaps more to the point for the cybersecurity community, also represents an impressive sci-fi feat of sheer hacker ingenuity. We know that if an adversary has control of the data a computer is processing, it can potentially take over that computer, says Tadayoshi Kono, the University of Washington computer science professor who led the project, comparing the technique to traditional hacker attacks that package malicious code and web pages or an email attachment. That means when you're looking at the security of computational biology systems, you're not only thinking about the network connectivity and USB drive and the user at the keyboard, but also the information stored in the DNA they're sequencing. It's about considering a different class of threat. For now, that threat remains more of a plot point in a Michael Crichton novel than one should concern computational biologists, rather. But as genetic sequencing is increasingly handled by centralized services, often run by university labs that owe the expensive gene sequencing equipment, that DNA-borne malware trick becomes ever so slightly more realistic, especially given that DNA samples come from outside sources, which may be difficult to properly vet. If hackers did pull off the trick, the researchers say that they could potentially gain access to valuable intellectual property, or possibly taint genetic analysis like criminal DNA testing. Companies could even potentially place malicious code in the DNA of genetically modified products as a way to protect trade secrets, the researchers suggest. There are a lot of interesting, or threatening, maybe a better word, applications of this coming in the future, says Peter Ney, a researcher on the project. Regardless of any practical reason for the research, however, the notion of building a computer attack known as an exploit with nothing but the information stored in a strand of DNA represented an epic hacker challenge for the University of Washington team. The researchers started by writing a well-known exploit called a buffer overflow designed to fill the space in the computer's memory meant for a certain piece of data and then spill out into another part of memory to plant its own malicious commands. But encoding that attack in actual DNA proved harder than they first imagined. DNA sequences work by mixing DNA with chemicals that bind differently to DNA's basic units of code, the chemical bases A, T, G, and C. And each, rather, emit a different color of light captured in the photo of the DNA molecules. To speed up the processing, the images of millions of bases are split up and the thousands of chunks are analyzed in parallel. So all the data that compromised their attack had to fit in just a few hundred of those bases to increase the likelihood that it would remain intact throughout the sequencer's parallel processing. When the researchers sent their carefully crafted attack to the DNA services, well, hold on, this might be pretty long. So yeah, this is pretty long. But yeah, so let me go through all this. The result finally was a piece of attack software that could survive the translation from physical DNA to the digital format, known as FASTQ, that's used to store the DNA sequence. And when that FASTQ file is compressed with a common compression system, programs such as FQZComp, FASTQ files are often compressed because they can stretch to gigs of text. It hacks that compression software with its buffer overflow exploit, breaking out of the program and into the memory of the computer running the software to run its own arbitrary commands. That attack was only fully translated about 37% of the time. It's probably going to be better now. I'm looking. A future hacker might be able to pull off the attack in a more realistic setting, particularly as more powerful gene sequencers start analyzing larger chunks of data that could better preserve an exploit's code. Needless to say, any possible DNA-based hacking is years away. This was 2017. We're past years. This is an interesting research about potential long-term risks. We agree with the premise of the study that this does not pose an imminent threat and is not a typical cybersecurity capability. But if they can put malware into a strand of DNA, then why can't they put DNA-embedded malware into a vaccine? Or an RNA vaccine, whose primary purpose is to change the DNA. So RNA works. So,
well,
if they can put
they
it,
gotta put enough man hours in it.
Yeah, you know, but they've got nothing but time.
The COVID vaccine showed people sometimes you can't rush these things because they did, and plus they admitted they never actually tested the vaccines.
But
they
think about it though, because we're seeing right here that they could put malware inside of a fucking vaccine. Inside of a DNA strand.
But they don't know if it's going to react the way they want it to
react.
Well,
yeah, but that was in 2017. It's been several years since then.
Well, a lot of things like that take 10 years plus.
Let's see, 17, 18, 19, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. It's been
2027, it'll be 10 years.
Yeah.
It is 2025, so you got 2 more years.
We'll see. You know, technology moves fast, too.
Well, yeah. Yeah, when you put people at risk trying stuff out, you want to make sure it's at least not going to do something crazy. And especially if it can become contagious.
So, all right, we'll talk about this one later. The world's first AI sex doll brothel.
Sounds gross.
Gonna talk about that later. So we're going to see Companion tomorrow, which got 90s. It's got 90 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got 90 on the critics, the people that saw it. Audience scores 90. Yeah, it's about a sex bot, guys, so this is
going
to be interesting.
Going with us, we're going to eat up at the Mexican
place. Yeah. Supposed to be the best place in what, the area?
It's my favorite place.
Okay.
Mexican food.
I've never been there, so we'll...
I thought you had.
Well, if I hadn't, I'll get to this
out
time.
There in Benton.
Yeah.
Well,
that's fine.
And plus, there's a movie theater over there, too, if we... Oh, we can't make it back.
right, we'll see.
We'll see here.
All right. So, at any rate, guys, what the hell? Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds moved to torpedo Justin Baldoni's $400 million lawsuit.
Oh, so that guy they're talking about was in that last movie that Brooke Lively was in, like Something of Us or something, Remember Us or something.
Yeah, it ends with us.
Anyway, apparently he, they said he was sexually harassing her the whole movie. And then, you know, did some scenes in the sex scene that she didn't consent to. That he just did it to get a reaction, you know. How sometimes they'll do something and not tell the actor and to get the reaction. Well, when it comes to that, apparently, you shouldn't be doing that. You know what wakes me up in the morning? Tongue in the ass. Look at that reaction.
Good Lord, he don't look good at all. Tom Selleck.
Oh, he's fucking 80.
He's 67. Oh, no, no, he is 80. Oh, he is fucking 80.
Yeah, they were talking about the other day.
He's 80. He's 80. I forgot he's 80.
He's 80.
Well, Justin Bieber really feels about that. I'm going to have to talk with that, with Empress. Not tomorrow, but Monday. All right. So, that's all we're going to do for right now as far as the Grim Articles show is concerned. And we'll be talking about some more stuff, obviously.
That means he was almost 40 when I used to watch him in Magnum P.S. And that was a long time ago, because...
Boy, I am definitely going to have to talk about this one. We should have talked about this on the robot show yesterday. Oh, well. I forgot. Okay, save I'm sorry. I'll save it for next time. All right, and it's not that old either. 28th of December. So, all right, guys. I'm out, and we will see you next time.
Later.
Enjoy the incline. I'm still hesitant on that one.
You're gonna make America great.